kind of looking back at it, it's kind of wild on, you know, where swimming has taken me. And like all my friends were like, I'm like on that process of potentially moving out of swimming. And if they, you know, if they bring in the 50 back, you know, for the next Olympics, that's the game changer there.
Welcome to Social Kick. I'm Brian Lundquist. We got a partial crew. Luke's off on soccer duty, but we got Dr. John Mullen, and joining us from across the pond, Shane Ryan. What's going on, Shane? How are you, man?
Good, guys. Good. Yeah, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, we always ask some audience for some questions to get us started here. So first, this one's from Neophyte Share, our follower on Instagram, who wants to know, which Ryans do you want on a Ryan-only relay?
Oh, that's a tough one there. Yeah, you're going to have to definitely have, I think, Ryan Murphy on the backstroke, for sure. Lochte, I think, fly, because he can swim fly. Or the breaststroke. What are there other Ryans? I could do free, so I'll do the free. But then is there another Ryan that I know of? Or do you guys know any other Ryans?
So yeah, John, we were talking about it. Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, Ryan Murphy, Ryan Lochte.
I might have gone Ryan White on the backstroke. And then...
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Maybe go Murph... fly, let you do freestyle, and then
Lochte breast.
What'd you say? Who do breast?
Lochte.
Lochte do breast.
Lochte do breast. That's what I would go with. Let's go with that one.
Yeah.
What about this, Shane? What's the strangest thing you've ever seen at a swim meet?
Oh, man. I mean, first off, we all know swimmers are a bit weird anyway, so you see some strange things on deck to begin with. Like, you see some people dance, and, like, just out of nowhere, they'll be in their little corner getting in the zone. You start seeing people dance, and, like, that's a bit odd. But, look, whatever gets you going. Definitely seeing someone at a very high caliber. I'm not going to say who in a European meet shave in the showers. Like right before a big competition, and I'm just like, that, like, why wouldn't you do that? Like,
you what know, is this, 1980?
Like in your hotel room or something like that.
Yeah, what are we
like
shaving?
It was wild. I couldn't believe it. I was like, "Yeah, all right." And I went up.
Was he like Shane? Get
the
back
full body
right here,
like
help me
his
out.
Head to toe shaving cream, like at. Like, it just looked like he was just straight up panicking. So I think that was probably the weirdest thing is just, like, seeing him do it. He was a little panicked, but, like, I asked him up to him, and I was like, "Are you all right?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm fine. He'll be all good." And he swam pretty quick. So, yeah, it was interesting. That was the weirdest. I think one of the weirdest things. It just kind of caught me off guard.
My favorite thing about that is that your reaction to seeing someone shaving in the shower was to go afterwards and ask him if he was doing okay.
Yeah, because I'm like, did you get kicked out of your hotel room or something happened to the hotel room? Like, are you mentally sound? Like, you just don't know. So yeah, that was definitely a wild one for sure.
Friends don't let friends shave in the shower. Okay.
No, Shane, not at all.
What is Ireland's most successful sport at the Olympics?
Ooh, it would have to be boxing. Yeah, boxing. We have Kelly Harrington, Katie Taylor. They're the two top, you know, female boxers. They both came home with gold medals. And then Aidan Walsh as well. He ended up, wild story about this lad. So he qualified for boxing and he went through with all the boxing. He ended up breaking his foot because he knew he made it to the next round to fight for the other, like the top medal. I think it was for like the silver or gold medal. But because he jumped up and celebrated, he came down and broke his ankle. So he had it and he like was guaranteed a bronze medal.
Oh
yeah. It's a wild, you can go on YouTube and look it up. Yeah. And he's a lovely lad. And it's just a wild, weird thing that happened. And yeah. So he got a bronze medal there. But yeah, it would definitely have to be boxing. And soon to be potentially swimming now with Daniel Wiffen and Mona McSherry up in the mix as well. So
but
boxing's always been good.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. All right. Well, what are you currently reading, watching, or listening to?
Oh, I can't say the band name, but you know the song Texas Sun by Kubugalin, I think it's called, or something. Anyway, I've been listening to those guys. It's kind of like a nice like country jazz kind of mix. So it's just kind of like a bit of like, it's like a Frank Ocean, John Mayer, kind of all mixed into one, but very chilled out vibes. So I've been listening to them a lot. Currently watching, I'm not watching anything. I've watched everything I've been needing to watch. I was watching Shogun for a good bit there. That was really good. Just love the whole Japanese culture and all that stuff. And I haven't been reading anything lately. So that's one thing for, you know, after this Olympic trials is try to be a bit better getting reading and, you know, doing audible books and stuff like that. I've been trying to go on a little bit more walks and stuff. So trying to be more, educate myself a bit more on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So let's talk about trials then. You got trials coming up. Give us the scoop on where you are now and what's kind of the process heading into trials. What's your schedule like?
Yeah, so trial starts on Wednesday. So we got like, 4 days until the meet starts. And then I'll be racing the 100 fly on Thursday and Friday, and then the 100 free on Saturday, Sunday. So my main thing, we were in Doha at World Championships in February, where we already qualified that medley relay, which is great. And we actually got into the world final as well. It was the first time for Ireland to do that. So this potentially could be, you know, the second time, you know, where I'm going to the Olympics and be on a new relay that's being qualified for the Olympics, which is great. The 100 fly, I think, will be good. I've been training more freestyle lately because I got shoulder surgery on my right shoulder about 2 years ago. And that was a big one. And that's really took a bit of a hit on my career a little bit. So no more backstroke. I can do 50 back, no problem. I can rip that. But it's just like the shoulder. I just can't get my shoulder in that position for me to anchor and actually go, which is really, yeah. I just don't have that. And I'm hypermobile, so I just like don't have that coming up and just kind of anchoring here and pressing down. Like I can't do that because they did was they cut the bicep and they sewed it to the bone. And then I got 7 suture anchors around the whole labrum. So when they went in, they were like, your shoulder was destroyed. And I had like 2 cysts on my scapula nerve here. So they went in with nice 5 big needles right before the Tokyo Olympics. And they went in, they took it out while I was still awake, which is kind of cool because you can see the x-ray. And it's like an x-ray machine. You can see the needle go in and you can see them take it out. And I'm like, let me look, but I keep my head this way. But that's been a big, big struggle. So, I mean, we're slowly, it's like I will never have the same range again, sadly. So I'm still learning how to swim different because it's like it takes over a year for the shoulder to be fully healed. So now I'm starting to make really good progress. But I mean, it's just the timing of things. But look, stuff happens in life and you just got to roll with it.
Yeah, that's great that you're getting back at this level with such a huge surgery. I think a lot of people don't realize how stressful backstroke is on your shoulder. A lot of people are like, I mean, backstroke, it's an easy one. But like you said, when you're really getting that reach and diving deep to anchor, it's a whole lot of stress on the front part of the shoulder. And if you're already hypermobile, it's just going to add more shearing in that joint there.
And especially because it's like, go on. Olympic trial. So like for the 100 back is like on the first day and everyone's like asking me like, oh, are you doing, you know, the 100 back? And I'm like, I'm not, sadly, you know, it's just like, so I'm just focusing on the stroke. So like fly's a lot easier on both the shoulders, you know, cause that's, you know, it's not like a single axis stroke, you know, you have both the arms, but then the freestyle, I'm starting to now really find and dial down how to maneuver my hand because I don't have that internal rotation. I have a lot of external, but no internal. So it's just that catch is really struggling. So some days it's there and some days it's not. So, but now I'm going through the taper blues at the moment. So I'm like, some days it's feel great. Some days I don't. So just got to play around with it, but we got next week and it'll be good. And it'll be, so it'll be a good little fight. I have to go 48.3 in that 100 free, which I think I definitely can do that. And then the 100 fly, we'll see what we can do. Cause sometimes I just swim fast randomly and just surprise myself. So the 100 fly is just a good way to kind of get on there. And then also potentially, you know, with relays and stuff like that, you know, just try to put, you know, the best relay together.
Could you tell us more about like what the Irish trials are like? I really am ignorant. I have no idea like kind of what the experience is like how many athletes are there? What is the quality like top to bottom? And I guess like the fan involvement, like is it selling out? Is it a pretty loud environment?
Yeah, so surprisingly enough, like the National Aquatic Center, it's here in Dublin, so it's on the National Sports Campus. So it's like our little like Irish Olympics, like Irish Olympic Center, basically. And funny enough, I used to live on the campus. It used to be all farm fields, but then they started putting rugby pitches in, rugby fields in, like indoor fields. They added a whole new gym, and then the pool was always there. So it's like a big pool. So you have stands on either side, and then you have a 50-meter pool, and then you have a 25 diving well as well. So it's really, really nice. High ceilings, you have some natural light that comes through, plenty of deck space. But yeah, it gets hot in there sometimes, but it's a great pool. It's like 9 feet deep all the way and the floors come up. So it's a quick pool. It's a very, very quick pool. Some of my best swims are in that pool. And then you have the warm down pool as well in the back. Sadly, there's no other 50-meter pool, like, you know, that's close by. So we have to warm up or warm down in that 25-meter pool. But yeah, like the quality, like that's the hardest thing in Ireland is having access to pools. I think we have about 450-meter pools in the whole country. And that's the hardest thing, you know, and then also having that high caliber of swimmers. So we have, like, you know, in the 100 free, probably about six guys that are somewhat, you know, competitive. You know, there's no one really there by me, sadly. We have this young lad named Evan Bailey. He's coming up. You know, Max McClusker, he was also, you know, he swam over in the States. He's swimming, you know, he's the butterfly on the relay. Like we'll have those guys there, but then that's really it in that freestyle, like, you know, for the 100 free. But then in the 50 free, you have a couple guys like Callum Bain and Tom Fannin. They're, you know, 22.0, 21.9, right around there. Breaststroke, we have two guys there, maybe three at most. So it's really just like top five that are really competitive, and it, you know, and sadly it gets a little bit worse in the females as well. But that's slowly starting to come up now since I've moved over and started representing Ireland. I've started seeing more money being put into the programs, better coaching, and some Ireland doing better with coaching programs. So you're starting to see more higher caliber swimmers that come in and go to the meet. So we have actually a really good junior squad that's coming up, but they just need access to, you know, those world championships meets, European meets, which they are. So they're starting to have that like eagerness and that determination to kind of get there and swim fast. But then, it is good. They, like, you know, have the music. They'll have, I think they're going to have a live band there and a DJ, which will be, I think that'll be the first time. But it's a fantastic pool. Love the pool. They run it really well, which is great. Everything's always on time. And then we also have like our little prep areas and stuff like that for each center. So we have a National Center Dublin, which that's I'm part of. And then there's National Center Limerick, and then National Center Bangor, which is up in Northern Ireland. So there's like three programs basically in Ireland. That's where like the 350-meter pools are really hosted at. It is a good environment, I'm not gonna lie, but it's also a relaxed environment because it's like my home pool. So I know where things are, like how far to push on the 15 meters. I know every inch of that wall, you know, and where to turn and all that stuff. So I have no excuses going into it, which is great. But it's also useful for backstroke because there's like a black marker on one of the beams right at the 15 meter mark that I'm like, all right, time to get going again. So that's one good thing that I loved about that pool.
Well, it doesn't matter. You can't swim backstroke anymore. So that one's done.
Yeah, I know, but still.
You've moved on.
Moved easy on backstroke.
Yeah. Well, nice and easy. We'll do that to warm down.
I'm picturing a Notre Dame football game at the start of this thing. It's just all the hype, all the Irish music. It's going.
Yeah, no, the Dublin's actually starting to become like one of the biggest, they're trying to become like a college football hub at the moment. So they're trying to get all the college football teams over and play in the Aviva, which I used to work for the FAI. So I got to go through the ins and outs. Lovely stadium. Really, really cool. So it's great. I love it. So I think the next one's in September. So I'm going to try to go to that one. Sadly, no Penn State, but yeah, so it's really cool. Dublin's a great spot.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Well, I want to talk about that a little bit too, because, you know, you're sharing about the swimming in the country, and then, you know, it's not always something that you see, having grown up in the U.S. and trained in the U.S., coming from Irish parents, or at least like your dad first gen, right? And then your mom of Irish descent. And so,
yeah,
like being able to represent from here. Ireland, like having represented Team USA and then made the switch, between 2012 and 16, so that you can compete starting, you know, in that quad for Ireland, internationally, you've had a lot of success, and it's given you exposure to maybe like fewer barriers, but also you still have to make these qualifying times. You know, and truer to your heritage, I'm just wondering what, like, do you have to live in Ireland, or was that a choice of, hey, just want to move there and have training, and there's good training environment, it builds camaraderie amongst Team Ireland. Like, what's kind of the protocol there?
Yeah, so because I represented Team USA over in 2013 and dual in the pool internationally, so I had to come over here and live here. I've always had my Irish passport. I've always, you know, had the US passport as well. But because I represented them internationally, I had to live here for a full year. And I did that back in like 2015. Went back, got my degree, did all that. And then eventually, you know, I had an opportunity to move over here because I actually love the pool. The training facilities here are amazing. It's just the one thing that we are missing is that higher caliber of swimmers and that competitiveness. I just wanted to decided to, you know, do something different. I wanted to explore and also have access to the European standards. You know, if I'm going to be representing Ireland, I would love to live in Ireland. So help with the, you know, sponsorships, you know, and, you know, just being able to, you know, help also do swim clinics around the country and be in the water with the younger generation and try to inspire another Mona McSherry or another Shane Ryan or Daniel Whiffen. You know, like that's kind of what I love to do. Like I just did a swim clinic on Thursday down in Waterford, which is about an hour away. And I was in the water with them. They were asking questions, was demonstrating things. But it's all those little things about tackling how to do a turn right, how to do a streamline right. But then also being in the water with Olympian will help potentially inspire, you know, more kids to stay within the sport. I think that's everywhere. Everyone struggles with that. So that's some of the reasons why I wanted to move over here was just having access to, you know, doctors and physios, having, you know, coaching staffs really well. So there's a lot of benefits of me moving over here in Ireland, over to Ireland. And, it's a really crazy ride because I got to go all over the world. Definitely switching over from Team USA to Ireland was the best decision of my life. Cause 30 years old and still swimming, trying to go to my third Olympics. Right. I have every medal, you know, except for an Olympic medal or a world long course medal, but I still have a world medal, European medal, you know, World University gold medal. So it's just, you know, kind of looking back at it, it's kind of wild on, you know, where swimming has taken me. And like all my friends were like, I'm like on that process of potentially moving out of swimming. And if they, you know, if they bring in the 50 back, you know, for the next Olympics, that's the game changer there. But, if they don't, it's like, though? Oh yeah. 50 back's fine.
50, you're okay.
Yeah.
Because you can mostly train, 50, not backstroke, and then maybe just race it or limit it some. And yeah.
Yeah. So the shoulder doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. Okay. It's the range that I can get and then produce the power. So when I swim, it's not like an even, you can see that I'm slipping a little. It's like the elbow kind of comes up and I don't have that power. So I have to like drop my hand. So it's just like not how I used to swim. I'm really big on feel. But the 50 back, I can rip a 50 back pretty, because like I've been 25-0 in season with the shoulder already, so like that's pretty good for, you know, I think the standards for about 50 backs, you know, if I shave and taper, we could even get even lower than that. But for the 100 back, it's because it's so much stress on the shoulder, I start to fatigue, the shoulder just fatigues, and then I'm swimming all with one arm then, and it's awful. It's so bad.
Is your catch also not as deep on the 50 back, just so you can have a higher rate?
Like yeah, you're not getting, yeah,
it's far behind. You're a little bit maybe wider, just so you can have that rate a little bit higher for the 50.
Yeah, I think so. But also with the 100 back, you rotate a bit more, and then you have to drop a bit more. But my issue is because of this shoulder surgery, my shoulder's so forward, so I'm up here like this a lot more, and the elbows tend to drop. So when I start to fatigue, that starts to go. But also my upper thoracic isn't as great on through my right side. It is to my right because of the shoulder surgery, because they bolted down the shoulder, which is wild. So I've been pushing like the mobility, and like I said, I'm hypermobile, but I'm still stiff, for me at least.
Sure.
Well, you're an old man, you know? Now that's what happens.
Yeah,
continue your right? swimming career into the 30s. Anything starts with a 3, you're gonna have some ailments. But on that point, there's like there's a lot of learnings too, and I'm curious to dig a little bit deeper into the training that you do, because as you mentioned, the one thing that's lacking is there just being a lot of other, you know, elite athletes to train with. In you saying that, what I hear too is Shane is good at guiding his own path and is comfortable with doing a good decent amount of training, like maybe not necessarily alone, but maybe more solo or with fewer athletes to compete with, and also that you probably have a lot of influence on your training program too. So just tell me about like the what the training program is like. How many people do you have in your group? How much are you moving around? I saw you did a training camp in Tenerife recently. So what's like life as a pro like for Shane Ryan?
Yeah, so we have, you know, we have the thing called National Center Dublin here. So it's like a little pro group that we have in Dublin, which is great. And there's like, you know, we have like 250 freestylers. We have like, you know, 200 guys, freestylers, 100 freestyler, but they're still quite young. They're about like 18 years old. So it's a quite a young guy, young guys there. Then we have like, you know, two breaststrokers, and then we have like two females. One's a 200, 100, and then one's a breaststroker as well. So it's a small enough group. So I think that's like 10, just under 10 people. So it's small enough. We work with this coach named Stephen Beckerleg, which is lovely. He's only about like 4 years older than I am. So we get along really, really well. And then, yes, we have a weight coach as well. And we have access to the Sports Institute, which we have, you know, like nutritionists, like doctors, like anything you can think of, we have, which is great. And that's one of the reasons why I decided to move over here, is just to have access to those things. You know, if any little niggle comes up, we'll get it fixed. But yeah, so like, you know, with the training, there was a period there where, you know, I was having a hard time, like just kind of plateauing. And I was just like, the training really wasn't working with me. So I had to sit down with my coach, Steve. And I'm like, Steve, like, look, I love you and the training's great, but like, I need to go somewhere else. Like I've been training by myself for like 5 years. I need something different. So I ended up going over to North Carolina with this guy named Elliot, which you guys, I think you all know. And I went over there with Marius Kuch and Matthew Josa and like a couple other guys there. And I was in North Carolina for a month. And like that type of training is like, that suits my body really well. Cause it's a lot. We swam once a day. It was about 3K a day. Now I was trying to get 3K in like pretty much a day, but it was just like, go. It was just like heavy resistance, speed, 100 pace, multiple reps, kick, lungs, like everything you can think of. And that type of training I haven't done in a while, because over here we do a lot more. We need to get the meters in, you know, we need to have that background so you don't die on the fade. But my body never really responded well to that longer swimming. So what I did was went over there and like my body composition just went, like I stayed the same weight, but I just like got really tight, abs came through, everything like just worked for me. It worked really, really well for me. So I've been doing that a lot more. Then we went to Tenerife. And then it was kind of like a hybrid then between swimming a little bit longer, but then also doing a lot more resistance stuff. You know, so like on the days where Steve has a lot of, you know, stand-ups, I would go then off and do my own set, you know, where I would do a resistance set that we would do in North Carolina, which I absolutely love. So just with the shoulder, I would lose a lot of catch, but with the resistance, I have to like two or three, you know, sets of the resistance work, you know, my shoulder would actually set and I would actually feel a lot better in the water then, which is great. So we found a way to actually help me get better, help me get fit, multiple reps, get the shoulder and get it locked down where I'm able to grip. And then also feel great as well, because I'm starting to drop down in weight, I'm starting to get fitter. So we found a good hybrid. Sadly, we wish we could have done that a couple of years ago, but I mean, at the end of the day, shoulda, woulda, coulda, can't really dwell on that. We did what we did. So we're moving forward. So yeah, next week will be interesting, but we always try to sit down and like, I like to challenge my coach, if I say that in the polite way. But at the end of the day, we always get the benefit. We're always both happy with, you know, what we always come up with. Cause like Steve, he's all about, you know, doing work, but always with a smile on his face. And I am too, which is great. So that's one of the reasons why I love working with Steve. And then actually going over to like train with Elliot as well. And the guys who are in North Carolina and Charlotte and Queens, like that was so much fun too. Cause that opened my eye and I'm still learning, you know, as 30 years old. And that's one great thing about swimming. You're always learning. You're always picking up new tips. So I think look at this upcoming Olympic trials. If I get the time, I get the time. If I don't, I don't. I'm still happy. I'm going to hold my head up high, chest up high. And, you know, I'd be like, you know what? I have no one to blame but myself. And yeah, we're going to go out and have fun.
Yeah. Being able to, like you said, continue to grow, there's always things to learn. And Elliot is definitely a creative guy with what he's been doing with Queens and in North Carolina. I guess while you were there, we had one question and it was kind of funny phrasing, but I'm going to ask anyway. It was, what's a killer tolerance set you had maybe when you were in Queens or on your training trip? So maybe a killer tolerance set, and that was from Nelson South Swim Club.
Ooh. So the killer set we would do. So I wasn't used to all like the main sets in North Carolina. So there was ones where we would do, oh, what was it? It was like 8 rounds of like 4 or 5 reps of something like of like 20 meters or 15 meters. And I think I changed it from 15 meters to 20 meters being like, I need to swim more. I need to do a little bit more power. And it started off. Yeah. We need to get the volume in, you know? And we like, Elliot was like, dude, this is gonna take a lot out of you. And I'm like, nah, no, it won't. And he was like, this is the reason why. Like, so their training schedule would like, they would train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they would have off on Thursday for a recovery day. And then Friday, Saturday. I'm like, who takes off on a Thursday? No, you don't need to do that. So eventually I learned the hard way, because the sets that we did were just like so intense on the body that like I would have to move my gym sessions around because I was so sore. So we would do multiple reps. It would be 6 to 8 rounds of 20 meters with resistance. So parachutes or the buckets that we would do. And it would just go, and it would only be like on 60 seconds. And like Elliot would be on us being like, all right, 30 seconds, let's go get back to the wall. He would be on us. So like your heart rate is just up for a whole hour, an hour and 20 minutes. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I started seeing my metabolism start to come back a lot more. I was able to like, you know, set my shoulder in a bit more, but we would also do no kicks off the wall. It would just be either one kick or push off and get right up into swimming. So it was just about maintaining the speed. And if you dropped below 0.2 in your times, because you have to stay within the time, I think you said like you have to get out and do some push-ups, which I was like, all right, we got to go. We don't want to be getting out and doing some push-ups. But I'd never experienced where every session we would do, I would come out and I would be absolutely like, my body would be throbbing, because it would like, you know, when you go to the gym and you get like a nice little pump on, you're like, oh yeah, nice little pump. I was getting that in the water, coming out of the water. And I've never experienced that before, which I was like, this is really, really good. So really adapted well to my body. And then I would go in and I would go to the gym and I would have to move my gym around because it was so sore. But then I started seeing I was getting stronger in the gym as well. And I was like, what is going on? This is weird. So that was definitely one of the hardest ones I did. And then in Tenerife, it was about just like, you know, continuing on doing meters, doubles, and doing some stand-ups and stuff like that, which is great. But I think executing stand-ups when you're feeling okay is really important. So instead of like doing them at the very end where you're absolutely wrecked and you don't feel great because of the accumulation of the swimming or of the week, you're not going to get too much out of it, you know. So that's why Elliot was like, well, let's do some of the speed work in the beginning of the week, or maybe on like a Tuesday or Wednesday where you're somewhat fresh, so your technique is good, so you can perform at the right way instead of at the end of the week. And we kind of started doing that and while I was in Tenerife, and Steve, my coach, was like, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to try to keep this up now, which is good. So it was nice.
Yeah, I think that's what I was getting at too, is the professionalism that you have to take at this point in your career to like sustain a professional career as a swimmer. Of course, everybody's going to go through ups and downs of performance and output. Like every year can't be your best year. But to have longevity, then you need to become a student of yourself and your own body and what your needs are. And to me, like, that's the fun part, is that you get to learn more. I mean, how fun is it in like the current year to have learned new things about how to boost your metabolism, how to make training even more fun, because you're like, holy shit, like this, I've never done this before. This hurts in a new way, and I'm seeing the results from it in a new way. Like, I mean, you talk about like the results of upcoming trials, and you know that'll go, you know, how it's going to go. Like at this point, like you don't have really that much control over it. It's like the work is done. You're going to produce the result. Yeah. But that said, I mean, I know you mentioned being like toward the potential end of your swimming career, but at the same time, like discovering things like this later too are invigorating to then go, okay, like maybe this is like creating a whole new set of capabilities and potential that you have as a swimmer, you know. So the next decade, exactly, come back when you're 40.
It's dangerous. We'll talk again. Yeah. No, it definitely is. And it's like, I was in a really bad spot, you know, mentally before. And I think like, I was just like after Worlds and like, you know, really after like Short Course Europeans in December, like I just was always constantly tired. And I don't know why. I got my blood work done. My nutrition was good. And I was just trying to figure out like, what is going on? I just want to sleep. I will wake up in the morning not wanting to go to training. And like, that was really, really odd for me, because I love going up, I love training, I love working hard and putting in, like, you know, putting in the work. But I just, for like, for months, I was just not happy. And I just wasn't wanting to go to training. And sometimes I would go to sleep. I'd be like, oh, I'm not going to training, I'm not feeling well. But once I got to North Carolina, it was just like eye opening, where I started getting the training like 40 minutes before. Like, Elliot, I would like text or talk to Elliot. I'm like, can we leave about 15 minutes earlier? Because we would drive together. We would bring he would also have his little dog Archie as well, which is great. So he had the dog on deck. So I was like, yeah, let's go a little walk before. And then let's go to training a bit early, just to make sure I get my body right, like roll out, do my shoulder rehab, stretch out. So when I get in the water, it's go time. I have no excuses, but I love that. And I haven't had that spark in a really long time, to get into training, doing things right. And I enjoyed it so much. It was wild. And it really brought back a lot of really good memories of what I was doing in college. And then, you know, some of the happier moments. But, you know, like you say, like, you go through a lot of those experiences of, you know, dropping down, not having that motivation, not having that discipline. But then I found it again. And it's great. And it's dangerous, because I'm like, do I really want to quit? Or do I really want to step away? Because now I found that I'm starting to go back up again. And I'm like, it's just such poor timing. I wish I had more time to work harder, you know, but at the end of the day, it is what it is.
That's all right. There's more opportunities after. I mean, there's so much pressure and awareness on the Olympic Games, and I understand it's a big deal. But at the same time, too, I mean, I think the ultimate goal for me personally as an athlete is always to get the most out of my own potential. And so, you know, if like, because I think at the end of the career, you know, it, reflecting back as you are years removed from it, to me, like, I just think about times that I wanted to go, less so results I wanted to have at certain races.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I was working to be able to achieve X. And, you know, like, it was really about my own personal journey. So that's my experience. So it's certainly biased by what I think about that. But I mean, I think if, you know, all you're really focusing on is what you can control, which ultimately produces the results, then, you know, well, that's all you can, you know, have to hang your hat on at the end of the day, is how well you showed up for you and yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the impact of the new learnings and the invigoration, and, hey, you know, like, oh, I didn't turn up to training because I didn't feel like it. And now with this sort of you express how there's like sort of a self-accountability that changes with this excitement and invigoration. How does that impact the people that you're around on a daily basis now, like how you're showing up as a example for how to be like a true pro around, you know, the rest of the training group that you have in Ireland?
No, it's great, because it's like, if you get to know me, like I wear my emotions quite like on my face, on my body. Like, people know when I come in, like, they know I'm set, and they're like, what's wrong? I'm like, man, this is what's wrong. And like, I just get like, you know, I'm just that type of person where I affect other people's moods. And that's one thing I had to learn a couple of years ago about, you know, how to control that, because not only for my own sake and my own mind, but also I am a figure here in Ireland where I will also affect other people, and I can't do that. I have to watch, you know, watch the negativity on deck. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, I went away to North Carolina, is to, you know, help myself with all that stuff. But it was just such positive vibes over there and working hard. And when I came back, like, I just continued that on. And like, you just see like the team is just a lot more happier. They're, you know, like, I'm just like, you know, got myself like a little underwater camera. So I've been trying to be a bit better on Instagram. So I'm always like, all right, guys, like, whenever you're done, like, let me know, we'll get some water content. And it's just like, really, things are just flowing a lot better, and also like a lot more confidence. But then there's also some people that are like, you know, kind of getting annoyed at me for doing things that my way. You know, instead of doing something with the team that, like, you know, say for instance, like a core exercise, I'm like, those core exercises, I've done them, they don't work for me. I need to do something that works for best for me. It's not just a generic thing. And they get pissed off at that. But I'm like, well, I'm not getting coached this day because I decided to do what I wanted to do. And I have no, and I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes or try to be disrespectful. And I'm like, that coach was like, you're not going to be coached today because you decided to do something else like that you wanted to do. I'm like, that's fine. I'm happy with that. Like, I know what I can do. I can, you know, I'm old enough now where I can take accountability for that. But then some swimmers are getting on to me about, you know, like doing that and that, like doing like on like, oh, if you did what everyone else is doing. But I was like, I had done what everyone else has done, and it didn't work. I'm doing what I need to do. And I was like, you're going to learn eventually that you need to stand up for your own self and be accountable for yourself to do what you need to do and what's best for you in the right, you know, in the right manner, you know. And like, look, I mean, it sucks when like, you know, one of your friends is coming at you like that. But also at the same time, I'm like, there's a difference. Like, I feel a lot more confident about myself and I know what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to turn around and blame anybody else. I'm not going to blame a coach. I'm not going to blame a session. I'm going to be like, you know what? I did what I thought was right. And I'm seeing the results and what I'm going to continue on doing. And, you know, the results are the results. And I'm going to help keep my head high. And, you know, if I give credit to the people I need to give credit to. But look, I mean, everyone's going to be there trying to go against you, but they're jealous. That's what I always find out, that, like, you know, they are a bit jealous because they aren't doing as well, or they want to be doing what I can do, but they can't. So that's why I keep doing what I, you know, believe in myself and also in the right manner as well.
Yeah. You can't always stoop to their level too, right? Like, yeah, you own your own success and charge forward confidently. Speaking of your Instagram and putting you've taken an approach to sharing some tips and tricks, and it's like gives you a little bit of a lens inside of, you know, what kind of training you do, which is cool, you know, like watching the strength training and some of the maybe more out of the box explosive power exercises that you know, are good in the water. And I even saw like a post you had recently shouting out Michael Andrew for sharing some, you know, like weighted, resisted, pool depth explosions off the bottom of the pool. And like, you know, so I'm curious, like what kind of reaction you've gotten from anyone on some of the things that you've shared there, especially like in a swim nation like Ireland, where, you know, the example you just gave, where the type of training that you're doing that fits for you is maybe counter to the narrative or the typical tradition. What are some of the things that people ask you about, like, whoa, I didn't know that you could train that way, you know?
I want to do that. So the one thing is definitely a lot more about the underwaters, because it's like, they're like, how can you move your body like that? So like, I'm quite hypermobile, and also I'm 6'6". So I have a long body, but I'm really like, you know, it's all about like, you know, with strength also comes flexibility. If you have good flexibility, you need to have good strength. And I think I take the weights really, really, I think they're really important. And like, I didn't really start lifting until I was like 18, until I went to like Penn State, never did doubles in high school or anything like that. But I made sure I got all my techniques down right. So having strong legs, you know, deadlifts, I think, are one of the best lifts for swimmers, just for, if you think about it, either a backstroke start, or I always try to like anything in the weight room, I'm always thinking, how is that geared towards swimming? You know, like that's how I always think. And where sometimes me and my weight coach, we kind of butt heads because he doesn't come from a swimming background. And like, I'm always like, I kind of do, like I'm a swimmer, I'm old, I know what to do. And I also see what other people are doing, but also I know what works in the water and also what he doesn't think it works in the water. And there's always like a core thing about having that strength. Yes, but also you need to tailor that strength to swimming. So either doing like, so some explosive squats, you know, with a staggered, like an actual track start, doing stuff like that, or even going from like a pull-up bar and hanging and doing some underwater, so some resistance work or full lengthening kind of jazz. But also I think hang cleans are really important as well, or power cleans from the floor. Cause if you think about like, that's from a start basically, or if you're going from the bottom, that's a full, you know, backstroke start, or even like a front start. Front crawl start. So it's like there's always tailored things, but then adding them into the water. So that's one thing, is definitely underwater. It's like, how can you do that? I'm like, well, it's just practice. You just got to practice. The other ones were, the one I put up, I think, was yesterday. So I put a weight belt on myself. And I don't actually have never seen this. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that. So I get like a stretch cord belt, and then I put like a 10 pound or 11 pound weight on my back, and I dive off with it. Doesn't hit me or anything like that. And like, I love that, because you have to drive off with a good power, and it will drop your hips down, but you have to maintain that line. And also when you enter in, your hips are going to drop, and it's going to throw you off a bit. So that's trying to maintain that trajectory, and also trying to get into that same line and that little donut hole you try to always go through, and you slip right on through, and then you try to maintain that. And sometimes I swim with the weight as well. So I'll swim with the weight on, just to make sure if my one hip is dropping too much, that weight will shift me over. So just trying to have a balanced hips with that weight as well will challenge your core, challenge your legs, and challenge your stroke as well. So doing things like that, just throwing your body off completely. I love doing that. But when you take the weight off, oh my God, you just fly off the block. It's wild. Like, it does throw you off. So, like, when you take the weight off, you only really push that start about 80%. You shouldn't go fully just because it does throw you off. So doing stuff like that, I love doing, or even swimming with a 5 pound or not a 5 pound, like a 3 pound weight in your hand as well, because it drops you. So making sure you're swimming really well. So people have been asking about that, and I love that one. I don't know if you guys ever seen that happen. Somebody put like a weight on your waist and trying to dive off.
I've never done the waist one. This is new to me for sure. Yeah. I mean,
I think I came up with that one. Yeah.
yeah, that one's cool. I do have other examples of usage of this cycle and swimming technique and use of toys and equipment where you do things to change the feel, to set up what the feel is like without the resistance or without the lack of catch, you know, like swimming with fists versus swimming with an open palm and just little things like that, that, you know, you put the weight on, then you take the weight off, and then it enhances, some aspect of the technique. Go ahead, John. I know you had one.
Yeah. With all the resisted swimming and, higher intensity work in the pool, you mentioned maybe changing the days that you're doing resistance training, but has it also changed what you're doing in the weight room as well? Like you said, when you leave the pool feeling like the pump, like a weight room type of pump.
Yeah.
I'm really curious how you've maybe adapted what you're doing in the weight room to still complement that.
Yeah. So when we were in North Carolina, we would always swim in the morning and then we would gym in the afternoon. And there would be some days where I'm just like so wrecked where I'm like, I'm going to move the gym, because at the end of the day, swimming is a bit more important, especially if you're doing that high intensity in the water. That's going to take a shot on your nervous system, your muscles, everything. Like everything is going to be really, really sore. So you need to let your body rest for it to go again. So like I would move around. So we would try to figure out when the days where it's actually not intense in the water, not as intense. And then we would lift then on that. But then when I came back, I came back to Ireland for like 2 days and then went off to Tenerife, right from North Carolina. So when we were in North Carolina, the schedule was all a bit different and the gym was fine. There was one day where I got up to like 118 kg, which is, I think that's like 270 pounds for a hand clean. Heavy. I had a key set that morning. So I did like a speed set that morning. But I didn't think I was going to be that snappy, but I got into it. So I always try to go into it and I base it on how I feel. If I feel really tired, there's no point in going really heavy. Focus on, drop the load, focus on something else and try to get something out of it. But then you need to come back to it and get your power out of it. You got to listen to your body. And that's one thing you need to really, I found as you got older, try to move your sessions around based on how you feel. And sometimes you do need to work through, but I think that's more, you work through it in the swimming sense, but in the gym, because it's more intense and also a lot more dangerous, move some things around. So that's kind of how we did. But since I came back to Ireland, we would always have, say, for instance, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So Monday, we would swim in the morning, and then Monday afternoon, we would gym, and then we would swim. Wednesday would be a swim gym, and then Friday would be a swim in the morning, and then a gym, and then a swim. I had to tell them, I'm like, I need to stop going to the gym and then coming in and doing a swim, because I'm so wrecked, because I'm putting such a high effort in the gym, coming returning around and only have like 20 minutes of chilling into a swim. Like, even though I'm fueling the right way and everything like that, I'm just drained. Like, and I just don't feel as good. Now, if we're doing a couple starts, something like under 1500 meters, okay, I think I can push that. But if I'm doing like 3K or two, it's like more so swimming, my body's just drained. So we would have to move that around. So let's say, for instance, on Friday or Monday, like I'm going to gym in the morning at like 10 a.m. and then swim in the afternoon instead of doing a gym and then swim. So I have a little bit more time in between.
As you mentioned, not just following the plan, but adjusting based on how you're feeling. I know we have a lot of coaches that are, more age group coaches and even probably some age group swimmers that listen to this. When do you feel initiating such control in your workouts is necessary? Because I'm sure you remember, doing age group swimming, everyone is more or less following the same thing. You can only kind of push envelopes so much. But now we hear, not just from you, but other elite athletes and sprinters, let's call it out, always require a little more individualization and a little more fine tuning.
We're a little bit more, we're like princesses a little bit,
Yeah.
We need a little tender love care.
There you go. So looking back, I guess, when do you think is the right time for someone to start, you know, advocating for themselves and knowing when to push or not push?
I think that's something that you have to earn to have that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's something that you definitely need to earn with your coach, and also know how your body's feeling. I think that's where it's really, really important, knowing how your body's acting, knowing how your body's feeling. Because I didn't really start to really gain that awareness until I got into college. And that's one thing where I started realizing, like, feeling my body a bit more and my catch and all that a lot more. But I think as you have to build that work, you have to build that base and that aerobic base as you're younger. So, but I think in the most important thing is making sure you're building that base when you're younger, but also doing a bit more dry land and hand-eye coordination. I think some of the best athletes in the world also play other, like in back in the day, used to play other sports. Like I grew up playing multiple different sports. So that's where I'm always thinking about how, like what way can I do this in a way where, you know, like a track start, like say for a track start, I started looking up workouts that athletics are doing, some athletic guys are doing off the block, because I think that might help me then. So there's different things that I've done when in the past, but even like throwing something. So I'll try to look up like shoulder exercises that our javelin throwers are using or anything like that, or any weighted stuff that they're doing. Because if you think about it, the way they're throwing, they're holding it here and they're coming around. It's the same thing as a swimming stroke. So like, that's how my mind's always working, about always trying to find something else. But I think when you're younger, you do a lot more hand-eye coordination, knowing what your body's doing, and also body awareness. I mean, I always try to teach the kids body awareness, know what your body's doing up here. And I'm always like, when you're swimming, do you see your hand up here? They're like, no. I'm like, exactly. You need to know what you're doing. So I always tell them, like, when you're warming up, trying to feel your body, actually look at your arm and look at what you're doing. So then you can feel what you're doing. You know what it looks like. So then you can adjust it a bit better for yourself then. So that's one thing about, you know, dry land, hand-eye coordination, some fun things you can do, but also getting the meters in, you have to build that aerobic base. But when you get older, up until like, you know, junior, senior year, that's where you might be able to start to tailor things a little bit more. And then when you get into college, I think the coaches know what they're doing in college, then they can figure it out there from there, you know?
I think that mentality is indicative of how you've found success in multiple strokes. You know, like just one of the things, just seeing somebody who's world class at flyback and free, is that you're just a general good all around swimmer. You're very aquatic. You are aware of how to move your body and how to find ways to be more explosive, more propulsive, more efficient in lots of different positions in the water. Yeah. So like, it just kind of makes sense that, you know, from that you would intuit that you just know how to move and are in tune with your body and probably can do the same similar types of things outside of the pool as well, you know.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily, maybe your boxing career after your swimming career is going to take off.
Hey,
you know, Ireland's next.
I got that which sadly I think they're taking away boxing out of the Olympics.
Are they really?
There's rumors. Yeah, I think so. And that's one of the original sports, which I'm not really too big of a fan in.
All right. Well, you know,
like that's dancing. They should keep it in. Oh, that's stop. Kind of don't even get me started on that.
Surfing.
One,
three on three.
Surfing. I think surfing. I think basketball. Basketball's a different story, man. I'm small in the basketball sense.
All right. So you're going to have to work on your breakdancing, your rock climbing, your speed rock climbing, or maybe you got to go old school and go back to, you know, badminton or ping pong. Sorry, table tennis.
Sport I would love to do? Rugby sevens. I would like that. That's a good one. There's only seven guys on it. Instead of like rugby is usually played with 15 guys, it's only seven guys on the same field. So you have to be quick and agile and just tough as well. So that's a fun one.
What are some of the things that you like to do with your boys in Ireland? Are they into watching rugby?
We all love rugby. The Irish rugby team is like one of the best in the world. You have like that, New Zealand, South Africa, France, like, you know, but like we love our rugby over here. We definitely do, which is like, that's one sport I actually didn't play growing up. It was like that, ice hockey, and then field hockey were like the ones I really didn't play. Everything else I played. But no, what I usually try to do like on my downtime is like, I love to play golf because it's such a skilled sport. It takes my mind away, and like to get better at golf, you have to play golf. So instead of being inside playing video games or watching a movie, I'd rather be outside, you know, getting frustrated, losing balls or looking for balls, and being out with the guys, you know, just being outside, you know, it just takes my mind away from swimming. It takes my, like, you know, frustration away from swimming as well. But like, just being out and also learning about yourself and how to control like the anger and also like just letting things go as well. I'm not an angry person at all. Like, I'll always, like, you know, if something breaks in the house, I'm like, it can be replaced, no problem. You know, but I think that's one way of like allowing myself to stress out, like, you know, vent my stress, get away from swimming. I'm outdoors. But also it sucks because like when you do swim, say for instance, like I'll have off on Wednesday night and then Thursday morning. So I'll go play golf after like a 4 or 5 hour double on Wednesday morning, go play golf then. Yeah. Oh, my body's aching. So I'm like, and you have to walk here in Ireland. You can't take golf buggies because you have old guys making fun of you all the time. I got bullied to get a push cart because I had old guys making fun of me so much. And even like everybody on the golf course, no matter where you go in Ireland. So it's just kind of the culture. So you have to walk 18 holes. Nice. Yeah. So that's like 4 or 5 hours, you know, out of your day, which I actually love to do. It's great.
Are they all links courses?
No. So we do have a lot of links courses over here, which is great, but a lot of them are parkland courses, which is great. And, you know, in Ireland, like during the summer, it'll be bright up until like 11:30 at night. Like, so you can play golf late here, which is really, really good. But then during the winter, it gets like dark at like 3:30 and it sucks.
Yeah.
But we're a lot up more north than you think, especially if you look at it at the map, which is wild. So I think where we are, we're like on the top of like Canada almost, like if you think so, like depend. Yeah, it's wild. So we actually got to see the Northern Lights and all that stuff. Like if you go up to like the north part of Ireland, sometimes you can actually see the Northern Lights without like a solar flare coming down and stuff like that, which is great.
Man, wow. That's awesome. I just heard there was a solar storm in the U.S. and there a lot of people were reporting that pretty far south in the U.S. you could see the Northern Lights and I've never seen them before. So
you had to take a photo. You had to take a photo of them.
Yeah.
That's one thing I didn't like. That's what I found out. Cause I looked up and I was like, everyone was posting all these like beautiful purple, like Northern Lights. And I'm looking out, I'm like, where the hell is these lights at? And I like walked out front and I'm like, the hell is going on here? And then I found out you had to take a photo of it on your, like the light exposure on like the night mode. And then you're able to see them. Now, maybe up in like Greenland, Iceland, or if you're a really dark area, you might have seen them, but I'm like, no, if I want to see the Northern Lights, like I want to see them without a camera. Like I want to see them and be like, experience that like sensational feeling and get the goosebumps, be like, that's wild.
Oh yeah. Well, that's crazy. I had no idea that that's what you had to do to see it. That's what I heard
from here. So I could be wrong, but right. I was like, man, that sucks. I was like, I'm glad that I didn't see it from a camera.
Man, the things you learn when you talk to Olympic swimmers.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, Shane, we got a few rapid fire questions and we'll let you go.
All right.
What's the hardest race in swimming?
200 back.
Olympic gold or world record?
Olympic gold for sure. You hold that forever. World records can be broken.
Do you pee in the pool in Ireland?
Hell yeah. Who doesn't?
What's your golf handicap?
13.
What could you go in 100 back right now while wearing a kilt?
Definitely under a minute, I think.
Hell yeah. Dude, a minute? What? Okay, cool. Have you ever cried at practice?
100%.
What's the most impressive race that you've ever seen live?
Ooh. One of the world records. I think the 100 free world record. In Rome, that Popovich did.
Yeah,
that was there. I was there for that. That was a really, really cool one because it was set, you know, the world record was set. I think, wasn't it set there? The world record in the 100 free was still set in that pool as well.
It was my teammate, yeah. Caesar. Yeah.
Yeah.
46.9. Yeah. So the 46.8 to take it down. That's wild. That's so crazy to see where that one goes. Speaking of that, what's the race that you're most excited to watch this summer? Let's call it.
This summer at the Olympics?
Yeah.
I would have to say one of Daniel Wiffen's races or one of Mona McSherry's like finals, because I think they're definitely going to getting into the final. Because I think now with the distance got like, you know, swimming, like it, to be honest and blunt, like it wasn't really too exciting like the last Olympics, the distance events. They really weren't. But the past 2 years, you're starting to see the guys and also bicker back and forth, and there's a, and they're fighting for it, and you can see they're fighting for it. I remember in Worlds in Japan, that was the first time where the stand was packed for distance events, and I loved it. So just having those boys there, I think they're, it's a really, really good for the swimming and also making, you know, the distance events more entertaining. And then Daniel loves to talk, you know, a little bit of smack. So I think they'll be good. A little bit of banter going back and forth from the boys. But the boy can back it up, you know, and I think they're going to be fighting. It's going to be a dog race. You know, it's like all the event, all the swims are going to be great, even on the men's and women's side. But I think the distance on the men's side, I think it's going to be, you never know what the hell's going to happen with those events now.
Yeah, that's true. That's, it's about as wide open, I think, as any of the events on the whole schedule when it comes to, like,
yeah,
they're still swimming elite times, but there's not a clear favorite amongst all of them. Bummer. We'll see if Hafnaoui ends up making it or not,
yeah,
for some of those mid-D races. But yeah, can't wait to watch some of it. All right, last one is, how often in your training program are you doing social kick over there?
Oh, pretty much every day. You got to have it every day. That's the way to do it. That is the way to do it. I always have to have a social kick, especially during the end or maybe just after a set, you know, through the rounds. You got to get, you know, take your mind away from it and then come back and reset. I think that's so important. It's hard to sometimes, you know, always be on it, but I think you need a little break, a 50 break, come back on, reset, and then go again.
Couldn't have said it better ourselves. Shane, thanks so much for hanging out with us. Let the people know where they can follow you.
Yeah, if you give me, you know, follow me on Shane Ryan OLY on Instagram. And yeah, give me a follow. And thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Hell yeah. Well, the first of hopefully multiple. Would love to check back in with you post trials and Olympics. And,
yeah.
And until then, we're here to watch you, and we'll be channeling some of your shoulder exercises and explosive techniques when we get in the pool. So thanks for the tidbits.
I have so much I can give you guys. I have crazy mind I have. So yeah, but no, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Well, for John and myself and Luke at Soccer, that's it for this episode of Social Kick. We'll see you next time. Hey everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you're enjoying Social Kick, tell your friends about it and be sure to tell us what you liked by leaving a comment and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Instagram. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Social Kick, and you can find all of our content on our website at thesocialkick.com.